Hey, it's Kyle Meredith, host of the Kyle Meredith With podcast, presented by WFPK at WFPK.org and the Consequence Podcast Network. It's a series that puts the spotlight on iconic musicians and actors, inviting them to drop by and talk about their latest projects, whether it's albums, TV shows, films, or beyond.
I'm going to say something I don't want to say. Here it goes. Without Spinal Tap, there is no Tenacious D.
Whoa. Man.
We get great stories and the biggest scoops from people like Garbage's Shirley Manson, the 1975's Matty Healy, Jack Black and Kyle Gass of Tenacious D, Maya Hawke, Kiefer Sutherland, and everyone in between. New episodes arrive every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones. You can find Kyle Meredith With on the Consequence Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to this week's Modern Drama Podcast. Billy Amendola here. And today we're going to speak with someone who is kind of the poster child for this new movie on Netflix called Count Me In. And it's an enthusiastic, it's inspiring, it's educational, it's a little bit of everything. And I really hope that everyone gets a chance to watch it. You don't even have to be a drummer to enjoy it. And I really hope that it inspires a next generation of people to pick up sticks and to play drums, because playing drums is fun and it's a cool thing. And today, our special guest, who is in the movie, and we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about her career. Let's welcome Jess Bowen. Hi. Are you, Jess?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here and chatting with you again.
I know. It's been a while because, as we were just saying, you did a couple of On the Beach for us, and I didn't realize how long ago that was. So you've been out there playing and doing your thing now, and now the movie. So let's jump right into the movie.
Let's do it.
tell me like how it came about. And I know Louise King, who we both know and right. we all love Louise. She was one of the directors on it. Started working on this almost 5 years ago, I think, right?
It was a while ago, because I joined, you know, filming with them in 2018, and they had already been doing it for, like you said, a few years before that. So I think it was probably like 2016 when they started, I imagine.
Right. And then, so what happened? Tell us the process. How did you wind up getting into the movie, and take us through the process?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is still wild to me that I'm a part of it, because, as you know, anyone who has watched it has seen that it's all of these incredible, amazing drummers, idols of mine. You know, there's Chad Smith is in there, Stephen Perkins, Cindy Blackman, Santana is in there. So, you know, I'm featured. We're kind of the four featured characters, I guess you would say, of that, the me and the three other drummers that I just mentioned. But I guess initially the way I found out about it was my management at the time had emailed me saying, you know, there's a drum documentary being filmed. They want to know if they can talk to you. And I just thought it was going to be like a, you know, just a an exchange back and forth of, yeah, asking me some questions, and that's what's going to be in the film, right? And little did I know that they wanted me to be kind of like the up and coming newbie that they were kind of featuring in there. And so you kind of see them introduce me, and I'm definitely, out of all of those drummers, the newbie. Everyone has had such amazing careers, and it was wild to be a part of it. And at the very end of it, you see the four of us get into a room and jam together. And again, that is literally the most nervous that I've ever been in my entire life for anything. I mean, tell me to get into a room with three idols of mine and just play drums. And like that was the craziest thing of my life. But I am so honored and thrilled to have been able to do it. And again, thanks to Louise King, because I believe she was the one that threw my name into the ring for that, because they were looking for, I think specifically, you know, an up and coming kind of female drummer in the industry that had been, you know, just, you know, doing it for a little bit, but still hadn't quite broken through. Right. And, and that's kind of where I think I had been sitting was, you know, I was in my band, the Somerset, for about 10 years. And then we went on a hiatus, and I've been playing with other artists since then, but I've kind of always been sitting in a certain spot, in the industry, still waiting to kind of break through and get to that next level. Right. And I think that's kind of why they introduced me as that character.
Well, that was a great, great choice. Cause you did a great, an amazing job. You really shone, you shined in that. It was really,
thank you. I mean, to be completely honest with you, it's hard for me to look back and watch that very last scene, because I could tell how nervous I was, and I know that my nerves kind of got the best of me. And I know that, like, I don't know, I'm very critical of myself, and I'm like, oh, I feel like I could have, you know, I wanted to play a different part, or I wish I played better or something like that. But I'm still very happy with how it turned out, and that I was in that room, you know?
No, you don't come off as nervous. I didn't get that impression at all. So now,
thank you.
Now they're going to watch it, and they're going to go, well, let me see. But it doesn't matter, because you play brilliantly. So it doesn't,
thank
you. Know,
you.
Fine.
And I appreciate that.
Everybody was having fun. That's what I liked about it. It wasn't like, oh, you know, it's a drum battle, you know, between four people. It was like everybody was just playing and having fun. And that's you in the drum circle in the beginning as well, right?
Yeah. We shot at this conservatory.
That's in LA, the LA Conservatory, right?
It's in LA, yeah. And what that was, it was amazing. And that was the first thing that I ever filmed, actually, for this documentary, was out at this conservatory. Stephen Perkins obviously was there, and he was kind of the drum leader, and they kind of introduced me with him, you know, him playing, and then me kind of playing along with him some percussion instruments. And then we just had a big group of people with us, and it really was, they just made it fun. It wasn't like they were like, okay, people do this or do that. It was just, hey, people that have never even played drums before were there, and they were like, we just want you to like pick up an instrument, move around, try different things, have fun with it. And I think you really, you know, you captured that in that scene. It was just people having fun playing drums.
Absolutely. And that's what makes it so enthusiastic about, like, inspiring people to want to play. Because right. I had a couple of friends call that were watching it. You know, they just watch whatever's new on Netflix. They're not musicians. And they loved the way it was put together about, you know, the pots and pans. Because we all know about the pots and pans. Because that's how we all started.
We all did it.
To them, it's like something like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. And then the kids screaming, getting their drum sets. I mean, we all had that feeling. So it captures, you know, it's all natural and organic, which makes it the film real.
It's so true. I watched it with my friends. We had like a viewing party, and none of them are drummers. Maybe a few of them are musicians, but most of them were just friends of mine you just wanted to watch it because they wanted to support me. And it was the same thing, like you said, with the pots and the pans and the reactions mm-hmm. when everyone biggest smiles on their faces in the room when they saw that happening. They're like, that's so cool. Did that happen to you? Did you do that? Make it so, yeah. And it's relatable for us as drummers. Like you said, we all have been there. We've all been playing on pots and pans. We all do the same, you know, we have our drummer, I don't know, little things that we do that we've all done, right?
Yeah. Well, one last thing on the film, and then we'll get a little bit into your career. The Ross Garfield, the drum doctors, because you know, Ross, love Ross as well. How is that experience? I mean, it's shown, we don't want to give away too much, but I mean, it's pretty wild, right? And it's, the sounds that
Yeah, he's amazing. And I was, again, just so honored to work with him. And yeah, they kind of paired us up to have our kind of stories intertwined, as far as me coming in to find, you know, a drum kit to use for the jam. And
was that the first time you guys met?
Yes, it actually was. And you'll see it in the movie. I do go into and see for the first time, you know, the whole warehouse of drums and snares and everything, that I was just like a kid in a candy store, right? Like, that's just any drummer's dream, is to walk into just that big of a place. It's like all these drums, and some drums that you like never even heard of before. That's like a one of a kind thing. You know, it was just an amazing experience. And he's just the best. He's such a sweet, he made me feel so comfortable and knew exactly what I wanted and knew how to get the tones out of the drums that I wanted. Just for me, you know, I feel like I wasn't even that good at explaining what I wanted. I was like, I don't know, I just really like big sounding drums. Like, I just want them to sound big. And he did. I mean, he did exactly what I wanted.
That's it. I like when he said, you know, I'll make them sound as big as you want without giving you all my secrets.
Exactly. Because, yeah, I mean, I still can't make my drums sound like that. Like, he did it. He did it all. So
he's been doing it for so many years and so many records. I mean, some guys, you know, I know I've been fortunate enough. I did a Hal Blaine thing years ago with Hal and Jim Keltner and J.R. Robson, a whole bunch of people. And I did sound check for them. So Russ set everything up. And when I sat behind that kid, to this day, it's probably the best sounding kid I think I've ever sat behind him and just sat down and played.
And it feels good. The way, like, he makes it sound good, and it feels so good when you're playing it too. I mean, it's just, he's obviously, that's why he is the drum doctor.
Yeah. For those of you out there that don't know about the drum doctor, you should check that out, especially if you're making records in LA, in California.
Absolutely. Yeah. He's the best.
So let's go back now. You mentioned the Somerset. That was your band. You made about, what, 5 or 6 albums, right?
We made 4 albums and like 1 or 2 EPs back in our day. And then we went on a hiatus in 2017, actually. And
then now recently back together, I heard, right?
Yes, actually, you know, serendipity at its finest. Our band got back together the day before the documentary came out on Netflix. Yeah.
I love stuff like that.
Yeah. And it was pure coincidence. Like I said, serendipity. I mean, it was, you know, we had planned our announcement maybe like, you know, a month before. We're like, okay, on August 23rd, we're going to announce that we're back together. And then maybe a day or two later, I had gotten a screenshot from, you know, a person on Instagram, and from Australia, actually. And they were like, is this you? And it was the picture of the documentary saying coming August 24th. And so I was like, how is this possible? Like, within 24 hours of each other, my band is announcing getting back together, and this documentary that I filmed years ago is coming out basically the same day.
Meant to be. I love circumstance. I say it all the time. The way things happen and fall into place is always the way it should. It's hard to plan things. I mean, I get yelled at all the time because I don't like to plan. I like, you know, spontaneity, and that's always the best. It's like, you know, of course you have to plan certain things, like we had to plan this today, so we know, you know, we couldn't just pick up the phone and say, hey, Jess, can you do this right now? But
right.
I don't like planning, like, especially if a new record's coming out, or when it's coming out, or, you know, it's spontaneity and circumstance, you know, and the film, who knows, if the film would have came out 3 years ago, it may not have made the impact that it's making now.
No one knows.
So I love all that. Yeah. So talking about the way things happen. So now you guys did a lot, you know, Lollapalooza and all that, right? You did some really big shows.
We did a lot of the Warped Tours. We, you know, we did like Soundwave in Australia. We did some festivals in the UK. We were mostly that, like, the kind of Warped Tour scene, I would say, here in the US is what we were mostly a part of.
So you've had quite a good number of years touring.
Yeah. I started touring literally right out of like high school. So I was 18 years old when we got signed to our first label, and they were like, cool, you got to hit the road. So, you know, that was like 2007, 2008. So I have been touring since I was 18, and yeah, it was 2007 or 8 when it started.
Great. Now going back, I know your dad played drums, right?
He did. Yep. Yeah.
So what does he say? Like he saw the film?
Yes, of course he was so proud and like, you know, maybe he shed a tear. I'm not quite sure. I didn't watch it with him, but he's just so proud because, you know, he's a drummer. He got me and my older brother into drums. You know, that was the thing in the family was like, we were the drummers, you know? And I'm so appreciative because I almost didn't do it. I didn't want to play drums at first because, I don't know, I guess I maybe because when I was younger and I was like so influenced by the way society was kind of like, well, girls don't play drums, right? Like that was kind of how I grew up in that kind of age where, you know, you didn't see many female drummers besides like Sheila E. was the really only drummer that I knew. And so I didn't really want to get into it, to be honest with you. I just didn't think of it. But luckily my dad kind of, I don't want to say he forced me, but he kind of bribed me because he told me, you know, if you just play drums for like a year in the school band, I'll get you that guitar that you've always wanted, and then just didn't get me the guitar. So I had to stick with the drums.
There you go. And you see, it worked. It all worked out. So
it did.
And it's true. And I'm so happy that more and more women, and that's why I hope even that this film encourages more and more women, because now, like Sheila just won a Hall of Fame. She's the first woman ever to be in the Modern Drummer Hall of Fame, which
I
is
saw that. Third.
But we never really thought about it until like when her and Cindy were nominated, we were like, wow, you know, if one of them win, it'll be the first. And it was the first time that it's like, it dawned on us. And it was like, and even Sheila, you know, all of us, we were like, it's about time. Yes, it's about time. But now that's going to open it up. You know, I mean, of course, women have won other categories in the Reader's Poll, but never the Hall of Fame. So that was a biggie for Sheila. So again, Sheila, congrats. Always going to be you're the leader of this now. So everyone's gonna and she was an influence on you, obviously. Who else was an influence growing up?
Well, so yeah, Sheila E., of course, how could she not be an influence? But other than that, you know, my dad, I would say that my first influences were kind of bands that my dad raised me on. So, you know, we listened to a lot of Journey, Boston, Chicago, and those were some of the first songs that I learned how to play on drums. But if I were to say like the way that I play now and who influenced me in the way that I play now, it would be probably like, you know, Chad Smith, Taylor Hawkins, Dave Grohl, Travis Barker. And those are kind of, I think in my playing, that's kind of where I gather, I get my influence.
And that's your generation.
Yes, exactly.
All the other stuff, the classic rock, which you probably, even if you didn't, if dad didn't turn you on then, you'd probably just be discovering that stuff now.
Right, exactly. Because of course everyone knows Journey, Boston, Chicago, right? But it was like at the time my dad would be listening to these bands. And so I would take his CDs and put them in my Discman and sit on the drum kit and just learn these songs because these were, you know, CDs that he had around the house. And then being in jazz band, because that was, like I said, my dad had told me to go into the school band to learn drums. I was in jazz band. So I was learning, you know, Buddy Rich and, like I said, Chicago, 26 to 4 was one of the first, 25 or 6 to 4 was one of the first songs I learned. And
I like what you said, though. I read something I remember you saying something about you didn't really like reading music because you felt that it was taking away from the way that you felt.
Yes.
I thought that was great because I did the same thing and I get yelled at, sorry, but I learned how to read, but I never liked it. You know, I just, and I had, thankfully I had such a good ear that I would, you know, cheat. I would go for lessons and I'd do it wrong. And the teacher would say, no, like this. And then I'd remember what he did. And then I would just get the paper and do it until he realized what I was doing, you know, that
you
know, wasn't really, I was just going by what I was just copying what he did. And he thought I was reading it. But I felt the same way. So I related to you when you said that. So do you think that that's what made you learn quicker or get your feel? Like, are you happy like now that you did that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I struggled. I did struggle in jazz band because I was trying so hard to play exactly what was written on the paper. And then when I was taking drum lessons, my first drum teacher, it was the same thing. You know, he'd write out parts for me to play, and I was so focused on reading it instead of like, how would this feel? Like, just like listen to the song or listen to like him play this and feel it. And the thing is, drummers, we all have our own feel, and we are all going to play things differently. And I think that's great. I don't think it's fair. I don't want to say it's fair or not fair, but I don't think it's like necessarily right to tell someone they have to play something a certain way. For instance, me being, you know, for the last few years, I was a hired gun. I was playing with all these different artists, and I know they've all had drummers before, but I'm going to bring in my feel to this set, as opposed to another drummer that you've had before. They're going to have their feel. And I'm not saying one is right over the other. It's right. Just, that's what you get with drummers. We're bringing our feel, our style. There's different dynamic that we have. There's ways that we play that are just different. And you can't tell someone that they have to feel it that way, because you just won't. Right. So, right. I just think it's, you know, obviously in school, people are teaching you to read music, but I finally started playing better. And I think my teacher even realized it when I just started feeling the music, and I would just listen to the songs. And then instead of reading the music, I would just feel it.
Right. So. And it's also, it's according to, and you know, we're not saying that schooling is bad, because schooling has a purpose, but there is a purpose. So you like me probably just wanted to play music and be in a band and play music, where most people who do that don't read music, you know, because they write songs and they play, like you say, with feel. Even if you're playing, you know, if you're doing studio work back in the day, yes, if you were doing certain studio work, charts were needed. If you were doing jingles, if you were doing movie scores, you know, and there's people like Steve Gadd, of course, we can name all the people that are so, so good at Dave Weckl, you know, reading something, but also making it feel good. But there's not a lot of people that can do that. This kind of, that's what always kind of got me. Like, you can have a guy or a girl be so technical and read every single note perfect, but then I always feel like you take the music away and there's like, where's the groove? Where's the feel?
Yeah.
You know, but if that's the kind of drummer you want to be, and you want to play in a pit, or you want to play, you know, on a Broadway show, you have to know how to read.
So absolutely.
It's really, you know, it's according to what you want to do. And I think that's what we try to teach people. You know, you have the option. If you want to go to school and learn how to play, study with the best. And I do believe it is good to go take lessons from a teacher just to get a different perspective, because then you get locked into your own thing and you pick up bad habits. You don't have somebody saying, well, you shouldn't do it like that. Try it like this.
Right.
You know, so schooling, I'm not saying don't go to school for music. I'm just saying, just think about how you want to use it later on, and then learn the rudiments and all of that. Yes. Cause that's all good for warm up. And if you're going to play a solo, you know, you need all those rudiments, but playing a groove that feels good, I don't think that can be taught. I think that's just something that, like you say, everybody has their own, and you do it.
Exactly. And again, that's just how I feel about it. But like you said, I mean, the best drummers that I know are all people that went to school for it, and they all read music almost the entire time. And there's, again, nothing wrong with that. I just, you know, that wasn't the way that I felt like I could really succeed in the drumming world. Like, I didn't feel like I was doing well when I had to read music and play drums, you know, it works for a lot of people.
Yeah, it worked for you, right? That's the point I want to get across, so that, you know, we're not discouraging people to go to school. That's not
exactly point. Not at all. Yeah, that's not the point.
So now, do you teach dad? Do you show dad some things? Do you guys play together at all?
Or, you know, it's so funny. We don't jam together that often, but like, he will. So he'll come to, you know, he comes to every show that I play that's in Arizona, or he grew up in Baltimore. So sometimes if he flew out to visit, he'd go visit family and come to my shows in Baltimore. But anytime he comes to those shows, he'll like watch me and be like, what you did in that one song, that's a really cool part. Like, I want to like try and play. And he was like, oh, those things that you do in this song, like, that's something that I would do. Like, he likes to compare, like, he'll come to the shows and watch what I do and be like, I would do that too. Or he'll be like, that was really cool, I want to start incorporating that. and what I do. Because my dad he's playing right now. He's in a Pink Floyd tribute band in Arizona.
Wow.
And they play.
I love this kind of stories.
Yeah. And they play all over Arizona and like everyone loves them. And so I think my dad like is just appreciating that we're both like, he likes to take some things that I do live and incorporate it in like what he does or like vice versa. I went and saw him play with his band and I was like, this is so cool. Cause like, I never really grew up. I just saw him like jamming around the house, but I never really saw him play with like his band, and he grew up playing in bands.
Right.
And so this is the first time that I've really been able to like watch him play in a band. And I'm just like, oh, it's so cool seeing you in the live element and like these parts that you do. It's like, we definitely take a little bit, I feel like we're similar drummers. Cause obviously I grew up listening to him play, but it's just cool to like see it, you know?
Yeah. Well, to watch that performance and him as a dad, and as a player, I know he's very, very proud of you. That goes without saying. I mean, and it's a cool, that's a very cool story. I love stories like that. I mean, Nick Mason is in the film.
He's in the film, yeah. My dad was very excited about that too. So
because you brought it up, and lately he, like a lot of people have been talking about like how underrated he kind of was, because like, you know, Roger Waters and Dave Gilmour kind of like, you know, overpowered that band so much. And Nick kind of just like did what he had to do. But, you know, they were brilliant parts that he played. And, you know, he did his job.
And it adds to the music, right? That's also how I feel about the way I play as a drummer. Like, you know, people could say someone's not as technical or whatever, but I think it's like, if you're in a band, you need to elevate the music. And if you're the drummer of a band, you want to elevate and play to the music and play the right parts to make, you know, it sound good. It doesn't need to be a drum, you know, solo for like a song or whatever, but I think it's important to, as drummers, like in bands, to make sure that you're playing to the music and really making sure that song gets to where it needs to be, you know?
Right. You play, because you're a song type drummer. You understand, you know, which is, we try to stress that too, because, you know, it's the same thing. There's no wrong or right way. You know, even the other day, somebody was saying about, they saw me, I still, you know, when I learned to play, I played traditional. So they, you know, little girl, she's 9 years old. I was showing her something and she's going to be, I mean, she's got it. She can play the drums. There's no offense. She blew my mind. Like everything I showed her, she was able, even opening the hi-hat, like usually.
Oh, I love that.
You don't get that on the first lesson, but now it's like.
And she was nine?
Nine.
She's nine?
Wow. So she saw me holding a stick like this. She kind of told me that I was holding the stick wrong. So it was pretty funny because I was like, yeah, well, I'm old and this is the way I learned how to play, but I could play like this. And then I showed her, you know, that I could play like that, but I'm still more comfortable playing like that. So I get my point to her that I'm trying to make here is there's no right or wrong way. Same thing with her foot. Like, you know, she said she saw me playing with my ball on my foot with my heel up most of the time.
Right. That's me too.
But I'm comfortable. She likes to play. She thought she was playing wrong because she plays with her foot on the pedal.
So
she was trying to do it with just the ball and she couldn't do it. But as soon as I said, no, there's no right or wrong. Just like with the stick, you're holding the stick this way now, just keep your foot on. And then she was able to do what I told her to do on the bass drum. Like,
right. Just so, play it how you can do it. Right. Like you can hear it and just play it how you feel like you're hearing it, you know?
Right. And it's, you know, and it all comes down to what kind of drummer you want to be.
Yes. Yeah. I agree with that for sure.
So now are you going to go back out on tour now with the band?
Yeah, I think the plan is, so we did just release our first song last week, and like that's the first song we've released in like 5 years. So I think we're just planning on writing a bunch more because we want to release an album sometime next year, hopefully earlier next year. But we do have a festival that we're playing in Arizona. That's our first show back. It's called the 8123 Festival. And that's going to be in January. And then I think we're just going to, like I said, finish the album and just, we're kind of playing it by ear. You know, we do have, you know, some tour offers, but I think we're trying to wait to see what feels right because we do want to get this album done.
And not only that, these days it's unfortunately back to one day at a time. It's hard to project.
That too. Exactly.
you know, I know everybody wants to go out and I know everybody wants to tour, but everybody has to be careful because this, you know, it's not going away.
Yeah.
You know, there's a problem. So I know as much as people want to play and everybody wants to go to shows and everybody wants to play, it has to be done a certain way and everybody has to be careful.
Yeah. Yeah. So who knows, you know, where we're going to be.
Before you know it, it's just only a few more months left. It'll be next year.
That's the thing. I know it's going to go by so quickly and then we'll already be into next year. But like you said, you just got to take it day by day because right now, you know, a bunch of shows and tours had been announced and then canceled just like that again. You know?
It's scary. It's scary. We don't. I know. It is scary. But it gives you time now to get together and write. So you're involved in the writing as well?
Yeah. So what's great about us getting back together as a band is that we kind of wanted to take it back to kind of the beginning, how we kind of started basically in our bedrooms in Arizona. We were all friends and it would be like, let's just get together and write and just see what happens and have fun. And that's what we wanted to do if we got back together as a band. And so that's what we've been doing. It's just been the four of us. And our bass player is a producer. He's been doing all of our, you know, production for our new stuff. And that's made it easier too, because we don't need to go somewhere else to get anything done. He's just producing it in-house and it just makes it easier. And we've been having a great time doing it. So I'm involved in the writing process and it's been really fun and just, you know, taking it back to the good old days when we used to do this just for fun, you know.
That's the reason why people play drums, you know, it's and or music in general, you know, and start bands. We need more bands. We desperately need more bands out there.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. So,
because I mean, top 40 radio. Yes. I mean, radio's not what it was. You know, I sound old cause I say radio still. But
I know what you mean though. Like top 40 radio has been, especially the last, I don't know how many years it's been where it's just really, you don't hear drums, right?
Yeah, it's programmed drums. I mean, I did that stuff in the 70s, you know, and the 80s mm-hmm. and the 90s. So it's like, yeah, you can have some programming drums in there, a loop or something, but when it's completely all robotic, if it's a dance song, if it's a certain kind of song, but not every single song.
Right, right. And I love that our band, we are kind of going back to like our rock roots, like our pop rock roots, which is why now we're like, you know, I'm playing drums on every song. Whereas, like you said, we had like an album or two where I didn't play anything on it because it was all programmed, but I was obviously in the band. It was just, I would have to take those parts and interpret them to play the live parts because some of them, I mean, they're not like real drum sounds, right? So you have to take these sounds that you're like, what would I play that would basically sound like this live?
Right. Now, when you guys, when you and the guys record, do you like to record together as a rhythm section, like the old school, or do you?
We actually do it separate still. Yeah, so like basically, a song will be laid down and then I'll have like a drum day where I go in and just record all the drums over the songs. But yeah, I mean, I think it just depends because it's harder right now because we're all in different areas. So right. I think if we were all in one place, yeah, I'd be like, okay, let's go in and do it maybe this certain way. But yeah, we're still doing it like a song. I'll have a song and it'll be like, okay, we're going in and doing drums for this now. And I lay the drums down for it.
Right. But everybody's playing and everything's not getting chopped up and put on the grid. And
yeah, we're all playing. Yeah, definitely all playing, which is really nice too.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit about gear. Tell us all the gear you use.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm very fortunate and lucky. I'm a DW artist and a Savian artist, Vader artist and Remo artist. So I've got a DW collector's kit that I absolutely love. It's a white sparkle with gold hardware. I can't tell you how many people comment on this kit anytime I'm on tour. Everyone sees it and they're like, that is a beautiful kit. And it sounds just as good as it looks, obviously.
Nice.
I love it. And an interesting thing about this kit is because I went to the DW factory and John Good was giving me the tour and telling me about all the different, you know, the different woods and all this, and was recommending, you know, these sizes to me. So he recommended, I have a 23-inch kick drum, which I feel like is you know, no one really has a 23, right?
And so Remo makes a head for that?
Remo does, they do, but you can't find it in stores. So obviously anytime I need new heads, I have to, because I'm again, fortunate enough that luckily I have a sponsorship through them that I can get those heads, but you wouldn't find those really in stores.
Right, yeah, so, yeah, it was 23, yeah, that's odd.
It's very odd, but it, you know, he was like, I swear by this, it sounds amazing. And I mean, he's right. I do love that kick drum. It's just funny because yeah, you can't find that head anywhere unless you order
it. Yeah, well, it's a good way to Chris Hart and everybody to keep you over there at Remo. Hey, Chris.
Yeah, right. exactly.
That's pretty cool though. And I'm sure that gives it a little of a unique sound.
It does. It's, you know, I normally went with, I think my last two or three kits before that were all 24 inch kicks. And then I was like, I guess I'll try it. Like, I was just going to do like a 22. And he's like, why don't you try a 23? And I was like, okay. And I did it. And I love it. I really love it.
There you go. Try. Why not? Open mind to try different things is how. And then if you didn't like it, you just say, nah.
Nah, send me another one, please. No. But of course, John Good. I mean, he knows his stuff, right? Obviously.
Yeah, John is a genius when it comes to building drums.
Oh, exactly. That's why I was like, I trust you. Even though this sounds odd, I'm going to do it. And so, yeah, so I've got that. And then I've got...
Now, in the studio, is that what you use in the studio as well? Or you have a different setup for the studio?
Yeah. I will use that in studio. And then obviously live. Yeah, that's the kit I've been using since like 2015. Nice. And so, yeah, I love it. Love it so much.
And it keeps your sound consistent as well.
It keeps the what?
It keeps your sound consistent.
Exactly. Yeah. And and then I've been with Sabian for a while. Honestly, I've been with Sabian and Vader the longest. I've been with them since I pretty much started in the Somerset. And I just love working with them. Sabian cymbals. I mean, I have so many different sets, but I feel like my favorite set that I've been using right now are my HHX kind of series. I've got the HHX hats. The Legacy Ride is like my favorite. I use a 22 inch Legacy Ride as a ride, but then I also crash on it. Right. Obviously a big rock sound. So it's like only when you're playing like huge venues, but if you're in a small place, that's going to be too much. but yeah, I'm trying to think what else. I use Universal sticks with Vader. I've been playing Universals since like 2010. And I've pretty much stuck with those ever since. Again, it's like just a good heavy hitting because I used to break a lot of sticks and I still break them, but I tend to hit really hard and I do a lot of rim shots on the snare. So I need a really sturdy stick, and that has done the job.
So what are some things that you like your warm-ups like before you go on stage? Because being that you do hit hard, because you're still young, you have that energy and that power. What are you, some of your techniques, your warm-ups?
Well, of course, you just kind of go through like some rudiments. I just have a practice pad, and about like maybe an hour before I get on stage, I'll just start doing just rudiments, whether it's doubles, paradiddles, you know, singles and just rolls. I just need to like, I loosen up my, you know, my hands and my forearms as much as possible. And then I just do a lot of stretching because I do hit hard, but I do play a lot. Like my body is very involved when I play. So I have to stretch a lot. I stretch my neck, I stretch my arms, stretch my legs because, you know, I also play with like the ball of my foot. So I feel like I'm always like on the edge of my seat and I'm right. And you got to get that calf kind of warmed up. Right. So I do a lot of warm-ups with that. But yeah, it's pretty much just that. And then I do drink like a Red Bull before I play, give me that extra energy. that's the thing. That's always my little go-to is drinking a Red Bull before I play.
I don't know how healthy that is though.
It's not. It's definitely not. It's a sugar-free Red Bull. Is that healthier a little bit?
I know at one time that was the thing. Everybody with the Red Bull and all the energy drinks but
yeah.
Like I said, you're young yet, so like you can get away with that. But you know, drinking Red Bull could be just as dangerous in the long run as drinking, you know, a shot of vodka.
It could be. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it also depends on who I'm playing with though, because, you know, recently I've been playing with, some other like indie pop artists, singer-songwriter kind of. So there's an artist I play with named Tessa Violet, and very fun to play with, but it, you know, doesn't take as much energy out of me. It's not rock, right? It's not like me needing to play like a whole rock set where I need that energy. So for instance, with her, I don't necessarily need the Red Bull, but but with my band, I do.
And that, you know, it makes sense. So before we go, being that you've had such real life experience being on the road, recording, I mean, pretty much doing it all, and everything happening for you, I'm so happy for you that things are just getting better and better and things are opening up more and more. What advice would you have for your 15-year-old, like what you know now, if you had to go back and give advice to yourself, like your 15-year-old self?
I mean, I would definitely say just be persistent. Don't ever give up, because, you know, there was a time where I just thought that I was going to stop doing it because I thought that I needed to be at such a different level and I was getting down on myself all the time. So if I just were to tell my 15-year-old self, just be happy with where you're at, just keep doing it and appreciate it and just keep doing it, because it's just going to keep getting better. And at least that's how I feel. Like, I feel like as years have gone on, things have just gotten better. So if I could tell that to 15-year-old me, I would do that, so that I would never have gotten down at any point in my life.
That's excellent advice. That's fantastic. And that's what I want our younger generation to, man, boy or girl, you know, doesn't nowadays, it's like, I was always against the whole, the hit like a girl contest and things. It's like, I saw the purpose, but I never liked the expression, oh, she's pretty good for a girl, no matter what instrument, if it was drums, guitar, you know, right. I mean, I loved Heart back in the day. And not once did I think, oh, she's pretty good for a girl. I mean, no, I just never, until it was brought, you know, the society started turning it into like, oh yeah, well, yeah, she's pretty good for a girl. I mean, yeah. What's the difference? It's like, you know, there's no difference. So
I agree with that. I think it would be nice to eliminate just the terms of, yeah, like really good for a girl, or like, but like you just said, I mean, it should be that used to be my biggest pet peeve on tour, when, you know, people at the shows would come up and be like, wow, you're so good for a girl. I'm like, that's such a backhanded compliment. You don't understand. Like, just, you didn't need to say the latter half. Can you just, you know?
I believe me, I know. And you know what? It's society in a way, but things are changing, thank God. You know, it's taken longer. And we're the fault too. Sheila made that quite clear. We didn't really think about that either. Like, why was there? There just never was, because now all of a sudden in the last couple of years, there's so many women playing drums that are great. But back then, especially when I was growing up, parents didn't want, number one, playing drums, whether you're a boy or a girl, it's loud, it's an expense. It's hard to get parents to give that support.
Right.
Actually, you came from a musical family, so you had that. That was one obstacle that you didn't have to worry about. But then it was like, well, girls don't play drums. You know, growing up, I heard that so much. Well, girls don't play drums, you know, so like girls don't play baseball, you know, girls don't.
Yeah.
Oh, she's not on my team. You know, if there was one girl I wanted to play because she was a tomboy, considered a tomboy, you know, so what? Like, she was better than half of the guys that I had to choose to pick. I was like, no, I'll take her, because I knew she was going to hit it over the fence.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty crazy. I am just happy to see that it is changing. Like you said, I mean, I cannot tell you, there's so many amazing female drummers out there now. And it just makes me so happy, because again, like you even mentioned, when, like, growing up, it's just, there were no other females that I felt like I, at least not at the level where they'd be visible, right? Like at the level of, like you said, a Sheila E. There were not many Sheila E's. There weren't. Sheila E is Sheila E. That's all you have, right, at the time. So I didn't have any other female drummers to look up to.
And then we had Karen Carpenter, but
right.
Karen, you know, she played on some songs. Hal Blaine, of course, played on a lot of that stuff. And she was visible, but she was kind of like the first girl you saw on TV playing the drums. And that became like, you know, like a novelty kind of thing. But then people were like, wow, I could, because a lot of young, well, older than you now, they will, you know, they'll mention Karen as an influence only because they were little and they grew up, you know, around that period. Right. But for your generation, yeah, Sheila, I mean, and then once Sheila started playing with Prince, who was, you know, as we all know, one of the greatest musicians in the world, he's not going to take just anybody. So, you know,
yeah,
he wanted her because he knew how great she was.
Exactly. So,
and, you know, she said what you said, you know, you just don't give up. There were times, you know, that was part of her advice too. There were times that you're going to feel like you want to give up, but you don't give up. If that's your passion, you just go for it.
Yeah.
And you know, gut feelings, it works with everything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's true.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out this afternoon to do this with us. And I wish you continued success. Good luck with the band. Please be careful on the road if you do go out on the road.
Yeah, thank you so much. And again, thank you so much for having me. It's just great to be here and chatting with you.
Yeah, no, it's I'm happy for you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And everybody check out Count Me In.
Yeah, check it out.
See you next time, everybody.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.